Welcome back. To start, Kyle Orton, I'm Travis. Kyle is with me. Kyle, we were like, I don't know if we'll be back this week. We're not sure. We don't know if there'll be Bears news.
We didn't know if there would be agency. Happening.
What are the Bears going
to
do?
We didn't know there would be what? Happening. So first of
there's
all,
there's nothing
goes,
to do.
I do want to. I think this. Well, I mean, honestly. So when we were last here, we were talking about the Pro Bowl caliber guard of the Kansas City Chiefs that we thought the Bears should acquire.
Yeah.
And they did that. So, I mean, easy enough. I mean, I guess this goes to show one thing that I really do forget about in these conversations. Is I forget about trades. I think as fans, we get into, like, we're looking at the Bears' stash of picks, and we get into mock draft season, and we start making plans for those picks, and we forget that, like, sometimes, you know, especially with this general manager, they can be used to acquire goods and services. So,
yeah, have we ever had the trade value rant? Have I done my trade value rant about NFL late round draft
well,
picks?
Well, you know, I feel like the NFL has shifted more towards your point of view over the years. Because I distinctly remember Travis had one of the all-time greatest meltdowns on draft day 2007 when the Patriots acquired Randy Moss for the cost of a fourth round pick.
Yeah.
I mean, I was in this man's basement. It was 45 minutes maybe that he was just going off, and he was like, there is no fucking way, name me a single fourth round pick in the history of the goddamn motherfucking NFL that could possibly be worth what Randy Moss is going to do with Tom fucking Brady, and all of you keep letting Bill Belichick do this because you jerk off to your stupid fucking mid-round draft picks when there are quality NFL players available for pennies on the dollar. It was great. It was an all-timer.
Yeah. It was, and back then they did it less often than they do it now.
Right,
it used to be like a fourth round pick. That's a star quarterback, buddy.
I remember when the NFL trade deadline was like a mockery. People never treated it seriously.
Yeah.
Because, like, I mean, it wasn't like MLB trade deadline where there was always a flurry of moves. I remember years where like no trades happened on the NFL trade deadline. And in the last couple of years, you start to see more and more and more teams trade. And I think part of that isn't necessarily because they don't value their draft picks. We actually have more appreciation for the value of draft picks. But that plays into it too, because for instance, with the Bears trading for Joe, you know what's weird is I'm familiar with this man. I have followed his entire career. He's obviously played for the Patriots. He's played for the Chiefs. I'm familiar with his PFF grade, so is yours. I even following this news, I've only read about it. Like, I don't really watch a lot of sports media. I just read it.
Do we need a pronunciation? I've always thought it was Thuny, but
it's Joe Thuny, I think, actually.
Is it Thuny?
Is it Thuny?
Ooh, I don't want to say Thuny. Ooh.
Like, is it Looney? Wait,
have I just never heard anybody say this
think,
dude's
I don't
name?
Think I've ever heard his name said out loud. Like, nobody on the broadcast is shouting out this man.
Well, we better get it right this
which is
time,
good.
Kyle.
Yeah.
All right,
so, I mean,
here we go.
What's confusing is earlier tonight, in preparation for this episode, I Googled how to pronounce Joe Thuny, and it told me that it was like two knee. Or
yeah,
no, that
you're
no,
correct.
Google told me Thuny. That it was like no. Google told me that it was like Thu knee actually, and I was like, okay, so Joe Thuny, we're good. Let's roll. But then TikTok chose to show me the ESPN clip of the breaking news, and they said Joe Thuny, and I was like, okay, well then I feel like it must be Joe Thuny.
Well, I just looked up a video of him saying his own name, which is what I prefer, and it is Thuny. So Joe Thuny.
Joe
Thuny. I've been saying that wrong for half a decade at least.
We have Looney Thuny in the house. Only cost a 2026 fourth round pick, and that's because the Bears are on the end.
We can't start there, though, because I feel like we need to go in the right progression.
We're rewinding?
We need to go back
to
the
first. Yes, you're right. Let's go back to the first move that the Bears made.
Yeah, because it felt a lot different before the second trade,
and it well this is a watershed moment for Ryan Poles, and I think it might not even be Ryan Poles is the thing, but we'll talk about it. So you and I had this discussion. So the Bears' first move was to trade. What was it? It was a six, right? It was a six.
A sixth round pick, yeah.
For Jonah, was it a 2025 six at least?
I believe it's 2025. Yeah, does it matter?
It was a 2026 four that they traded the Chiefs. So they traded a six to the Rams to get Jonah Jackson. And I would say that you and I were both like whelmed by that move.
Yeah, in a vacuum, right? Like a six round pick for a guy who has been this good in his career is obvious.
Right. And when we say this good, we don't mean like just good. We mean like an average starting. He's been an average starting guard. And yep. he has familiarity, obviously, with Ben Johnson's system. He started 40 games for him in Detroit. So, like, a sixth for a guy who you can certainly pencil in, I think, is your starting right guard at this moment in time. And have it be perfectly prime about that. We were like, that is fine. But, and I actually sent you the GIF from The Simpsons of Reverend Lovejoy when I believe it was an episode, I believe he gives this answer response to Ned asking if God is punishing him. And Reverend Lovejoy goes, short answer, yeah. I gotta look up the GIF.
You gotta look it up. It's a good quote. It's a good Simpsons reference. Hold on.
Yeah. It's one of my favorites. And there are elder millennials and young Gen X listening to this podcast right now that are shaking with rage that I don't have the Simpsons
yesterday. Yesterday, I think, was the 30th anniversary of the Simpsons episode that spawned like 8 hardcore memes. The man getting hit in groin with football, all the Mr. Burns memes.
Okay. So, yeah, the message that I sent was So Flanders asks if God is torturing him, and Rev Lovejoy says, short answer, yes, with an if. Long answer, no, with a but. And that was when I was saying, is this a good move? Because we both were saying that, like, in a vacuum, if this is a move, mm-hmm. and by a move we mean in a series of moves, then it's fine. If it's
great, really,
the
yeah.
move, it's terrifying. And yeah. we said specifically with Ryan Poles, we have done this song and dance for 3 fucking off seasons where we're like, he makes a move for Ryan Bates. And you're like, yeah, I mean, that's fine. This is a guy who is a quality reserve. He has experience at 3 different positions. Same with like Lucas Patrick, where it's like, yeah, you see the logic there. That's good depth to have. But obviously that's not the move. And then a couple weeks later, you're like, oh, fuck, that was the move. And then
that was it.
Then you're like, okay, well, all right. So they weren't super active in free agency, but obviously they're going to, in the middle rounds of the draft, they're going to feast. They're going to target. They're going to get some guards going in the pipeline like Green Bay always does. And then they don't. And so I think you and I had this conversation. We were like, we are done giving Ryan Poles the benefit of the doubt on this shit. So like, I'm not going to heap praise on this move until I know for sure that it's not the move. Cause I think we both could have seen, in previous off seasons, you could see Ryan Poles being like, I'm gonna trade for Jonah Jackson. We're gonna draft a guard in the second round. We're gonna roll with Coleman Shelton and a 4th round pick at center. And if everything works out and everybody plays to the best of their abilities and nobody gets hurt, our offensive line might be average, which is what he's done for 3 fucking years. And so that was where we were at. We were like, that's why I'm really glad the other shoe dropped pretty quickly before we could record this episode. So we could be like, okay, I'm seeing a plan here now. And so then when you trade a 2026 4 for Joe Tooney, and I think a short term extension is going to come with that, which I think we're even at 32. This is a guy who's a technician who, especially if you leave him at fucking guard, because some of the idea that this man showed any signs of decline this year were because the Chiefs moved him out to left tackle,
yeah.
and he was average there. And I think you guys need to understand how fucking insanely valuable it is that you have an all-pro caliber guard who also in a pinch can be an average left tackle. Like that should not be something you hold against Joe Tooney that, he went to left guard or left tackle and he was just okay there.
We're going to come into this draft here in a few weeks. And we're going to talk about like 6 offensive linemen who are guards who could maybe one day play tackle. Like that's all we've got in this draft, basically. This is what you would hope for, right? An ideal guard. And for some reason, he could also be a top half of the league tackle for you. Like there's nothing wrong with that. I don't want to move on too quickly from Jonah Jackson because I do think Joe Tooney is kind of like a home run here. It changes the perspective on everything.
Right. And this is the first sign that Ryan Poles is serious about fixing this offensive line. And then that raises the question, is Ryan Poles serious about fixing this offensive line? Or is Ben Johnson serious about fixing this offensive line? Because Ben Johnson knows what makes his scheme go. And we were saying last week, our hope here is that Ben Johnson has an influence here and that Ben Johnson gets to dictate like, no, this is what I need to run my system. And if that's the case, we're going to need some fucking offensive lineman here. And I'm not worried about, one other thing I was going to say about Tooney is I'm not super worried about a short-term extension, because we were talking about the Bears possibly adding Kevin Zeitler as a one-year stopgap.
Yeah.
And that guy's 3 years older than Tooney. And I think Tooney will age similarly. So I'm not super concerned about him immediately falling off a cliff. Could see them doing a short-term extension to give them some more cap room, possibly to still make some other moves in free agency, because, well, I guess we're not, let's not go there yet, I guess, because we still got more to talk about. You want to keep talking about Jonah Jackson. Travis, say your piece about Jonah Jackson now that we've talked about how it's not the move, it's a move.
Yeah, so part of the concern, we have to talk about the concerns here. The dude had a disastrous year last year, signed a big deal in the offseason with the Rams, like part of a lot of big money deals for guards, came out, got hurt his shoulder. They tried to move him to center right around the time that he hurt his shoulder. He kind of got pushed out by Steve Avila, who we both liked in the draft, but maybe not quite that much. And then he was out for a prolonged period of time. When he came back, they kind of had their line all set. The Rams were kind of improving as the season went on, and their line was as well. And they were like, hey, maybe we'll play you at center? Question mark. They put him at center. It didn't really work. They went back to the guy they already had at center. And there was just nowhere left for Jonah Jackson. So this is obviously not ideal. This isn't like the home run hit, which is why both of us were kind of like, okay, like it's a 6-round draft pick. And it's just, he only has guaranteed money for this year. So there's really no risk. It's a good move. It's a good move, but there's got to be more coming. Right.
Right. Yeah.
But still, I mean, like the upside is there. The dude's 28. He just signed a big extension because he was fantastic the year before. The Rams just ended up with a bunch of rookies who were really strong last year.
Right. It's one. And the thing is, Jackson did basically start every game in which he was available and healthy for them. So the big black mark on the season was the injury. And the injury, you know, and it's kind of funny, I'm not trying to hand wave off an injury that cost him, you know, 13 games, especially when I was talking about how I don't want Tevin Jenkins back, no matter how little the price was, because I'm just tired of having guys that aren't available. But it was his first injury in a career that has not had a lot of injuries, and it was a broken scapula, so it's not the dreaded back injury that just lingers right. And lingers and lingers. It's not a quad injury, a hammy injury. It's not the mysterious neck injuries. You know, you really worry about those vague soft tissue injuries that are easily re-aggravated. I mean, a broken bone's a broken bone. You're not at greater risk of breaking it again. I mean, this is a guy that's durable, that has generally been durable in his career, that knows the scheme. I think, funny enough, is a guy that I think he's fairly similar as a player to Tevin Jenkins, in that you'll get very mixed opinions on him. Cause there are, you know, like Brandon Thorne is a guy that I really love to follow for offensive line talk. He loves Jonah Jackson. Eddie Dukes is another guy. I don't know. I can't even say his name. There's another offensive line guy. Really EJ Dukes or there's a
Frank Dukes. Frank Dukes.
I don't know. There's a Dukes in there somewhere. Hold on. Yeah. Right now this is going to bother me.
Frank Dukes is everywhere.
Offensive line.
Especially according to him. According to Frank Dukes, he probably played offensive line in the NFL, quite frankly.
Well, this is just bringing up. Who is this guy? Oh, my God. Anyways.
This is exciting. Like, there are some people listening to this right now who know the story of Frank Dukes who are, like, popping hard. And you're just like, I don't know who the fuck that is.
Yeah, I got nothing there. No, but it's a couple of film guys, a couple of offensive linemen guys really love this move. They really love Jonah Jackson. They think he's a mauler, you know, a tone setter. He is a guy that their physical player, those guys really like. But the PFF grades are whelming. They're not disastrous. I think he's been basically in the mid-60s every year of his career. He's a better run blocker than pass blocker. And that's, again, that's Tevin Jenkins there, where it's like you get film graders and you get, you know, offensive line coaches and stuff, like offensive line gurus, and they freaking love the guy because they're looking at the pancake blocks and they love a great run blocker. Whereas fans and, you know, PFF, please like that, they're looking more at the blown block that occasionally leads to the nasty sack. And you know, it all adds up to an average guy, which is what he's been. He's been average throughout his career, but you get such divergent opinions on him because if you look only at the physical tools and the highlight pancakes, you just keep thinking like there's a stud in there. And if you just keep looking at the lapses and the sacks, you're just like, that guy sucks ass. And of course the truth is right there in the middle, which is kind of how I've always felt about Tevin Jenkins. You know, people talked about him like he was an elite guard because, I mean, when Tevin would put a couple guys per game on their ass and just take your breath away, but he would also pull left when he was supposed to go right two or three times a game. It all evens out. But yeah, I mean, Jonah Jackson, you're penciling him as your right guard, but I don't think you hope he's not the long-term plan at right guard either. And I think they still have their picks intact. We've talked about this where polls, what I specifically said is we both have usually been on board with what we think is phase one of Poles' plan each offseason. Yeah. But then phase two never happens. So we've said so many times, well, this is fine if you're also going to throw some draft picks at this. And so this year, I mean, I think we're even more than fine with phase one. This is a good phase one, especially because the rumors are hot and heavy from Cronin, from Biggs, the two closest things to scoop guys that we have on the Bears beat, other people around the league. You know, some of the big accounts have been good. Chicago's not done. I think there's a lot of smoke around possibly signing Drew Dahlman of the Falcons to play center. Mm-hmm. And Ben Johnson also has said, like, it's a position where you kind of need a veteran, especially with a young quarterback, with his system and all the things that it asked their guys to do. You know, he really values a veteran center. So I think that's something that they're going to approach in free agency, too. And so if you walk in to the draft with Braxton Jones, Joe Tooney, Drew Dahlman, Jonah Jackson, Darnell Wright as your offensive line, that's your week one offensive line there. That's good. You're in good shape.
That's suddenly we have a very good offensive line. That's kind of shocking.
Yeah, and obviously we're hoping then that there are still some second and third round picks maybe thrown at building depth behind those guys. But at the same time, we still would hope that's what we're hoping is phase two. At the same time, this is a better phase one than he's had. This is not Lucas Patrick and Ryan Bates and Nate Davis and Pray for Rain. Like, this is, you know, these are quality offensive linemen. This is a quality offensive line you've got potentially. Now, obviously, that's contingent on them actually signing a Drew Dahlman or a Ryan Kelly even to play center. And then hopefully face, but then you do give yourself flexibility as to where you are taking those guys in the draft and when and if you're reaching on guys at those positions in the draft. And that's one thing we talked about with this draft too, is I don't love that Ryan Poles consistently pigeonholed himself, but the year that he pigeonholed himself into taking Darnell Wright, we still felt pretty good about it because we felt Darnell Wright was going to be there and we really liked Darnell Wright. And we knew like, okay, you're pigeonholing yourself, but you're pigeonholing yourself into a very good starting right tackle, in our opinion. And the same with Roma Dunze last year. It's like, you don't love that you sort of have to take a wide receiver, but this is the draft where you need to take a wide receiver. This is not the draft to need anything at 10. Yeah. Like, you need to be flexible with your approach to that 10th overall draft pick, because it might come down to the best move is trading down. If you get a Dahlman here, then you are really, they have a million options with how they could approach the draft. They could use it to address their other edge that they sorely need. They could use it to take offensive line depth.
My long conspiracy theory on this with him taking care of the offensive line before we get to the draft is that Dennis Allen and Ben Johnson and Ryan Poles are all going to three-way shake hands and just say, whichever of James Pierce and Shamar Stewart is there at 10, good deal, good deal. And then we're just going to do whatever we do in the second round.
Well, that's your conspiracy theory. My conspiracy theory is set this offensive line.
Ashton Giante.
So they take Ashton and we don't immediately melt down over them doing it.
I'm going to melt down immediately.
I mean, here's the thing. Yeah. I mean, here's the thing, Travis. If they sign Drew Dahlman, let's say they sign Drew Dahlman, and here's something.
The smoke on Dahlman is, again, like, if the Falcons don't come out and just franchise him like the Chiefs did with Trey Smith, it just feels like the Bears have already worked some deal behind the scenes with him or something.
Well, and here's so just came out today. Trey Hendrickson has asked the Bengals for a trade. The price is allegedly a second round pick. So I ask you, Travis.
Oh man, he has two second rounders right
now.
Yeah,
you know, and you know he, you know how he, you know what he loves to do. You know what he loves to do when he's got 2 seconds.
He has two.
If he flips a two for Trey Hendrickson and he signs Drew Dahlman, I don't know how you make all that work financially, but that's why you have a quarterback on a rookie contract. This is the year you do that kind of shit. If he signs Drew Dahlman, if he takes a two for Trey Hendrickson, that's all of your biggest needs.
Then you draft Ashton. Yeah.
Does that reduce your, I was like, is that a way to,
if he trades, if it's 1 second round pick for Trey Hendrickson, I don't care. I'll frame a picture of Ryan Poles and hang it above my bed.
Right.
It, like, for this offseason and what he's accomplished. So, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. At that point, draft your running back. I don't give a shit.
Yeah. Yeah. Take Ashton GT and then just be like, you know what? Maybe 3 years from now, we will regret some of the decisions made, but 2025 sure seems like it could be a lot of fucking fun.
We are so good at winning the offseason, Kyle. Like, we are the best. These Bears, Ryan Poles wins every offseason so hard.
Yeah.
Oh.
No doubt about that.
Why would the Bengals trade Trey Hendrickson for just 1 second round pick? Is it the same reason that Joe Tooney for a single fourth round pick?
Well, he's 30 years old and he wants new paper, and everyone's looking at the deal that Max Crosby just got.
Ah, I see. The concern is how much we will have to pay him in extension. I get it. Okay. All right. So we talked about Jonah Jackson. All of our fears were quelled within 24 hours there. Right when the Bears signed Joe Tooney, you sent me, Kyle, because my power was out because I was in the middle of a fucking blizzard, and you sent me a message that said, "Oh, the Bears got Tooney for a fourth round pick, not in this draft." And I was like, "Do you mean Joe? Like, is there another guy with that last name in the NFL?" Because I couldn't access the internet, and I was like, "There's no way." There's no possible way that the Chiefs traded us a top three left guard in the NFL for a fourth round pick that isn't even in this draft. And you were like, no, that's what fucking happened. Kyle, do you remember for how long I was pissed off about the Bears not trading for Santonio Holmes? You remember when he got traded away for like peanuts for a single draft pick? And I was like, the Bears need Santonio Holmes. They won't get years. I couldn't get over it. This is that move. This is the move that other teams in the NFL are looking at. Like, but I have a fourth round pick and I want Joe Tooney. Like, why didn't you call me? Maybe I would have given you a third. This seems insane on its face. I understand he's 32, but guards age very gracefully. This dude could have 4 more years of top 5 guard play in the NFL. He's practically he's a legend in 2 places along the offensive line.
He's played in 6 fucking Super Bowls.
This man is like one of the most highly decorated offensive linemen in NFL history, and now he's here.
Yeah.
How did this happen, Kyle?
Ryan
Poles, did he just big brain this and he was like, hey, you have to pay Trey Smith?
I think that.
What if I took your other guard?
Yeah, I think I think that's probably where the Chiefs were at. Like, we can only pay one of these guys.
Mm-hmm.
Economically, it makes sense to pay the one who's younger, you know, to a longer term deal. You know, because with Joe Tooney, you're probably only looking at a 2, maybe 3 year extension tops, and the third year is probably mostly fake. So, you know, that's not spreading the cap hits very much for a team that's up against the cap like Kansas City is.
Yeah.
Obviously Poles has a good relationship with that front office. He came from there. He knows everyone there. He was there when they brought in Joe Tooney. So I'm sure he has the inside track there too, where he probably is like, look, as soon as you guys figure out what you're doing with your guard situation, you call me and we'll work something out. And I think that's probably that's what happened. One thing I wanted to say when it comes to these two guards and potentially Dahlman, with the Bears fixing the interior of their offensive line. You know, I talked about how with Caleb's ability to escape pressure and, you know, to throw on the run, the fact that the Bears' strength on their offensive line has been at the tackle positions is almost, it's It's not as much of a blessing as it normally would be, because Caleb can see that rusher off the edge and he can get out of the way. He does that really well. What consistently fucked them up all year long was instant pressure up the middle. And that was the kind of nightmare that Bryce Young was dealing with as a rookie in Carolina too. And it, you know, obviously in Caleb and Bryce both are guys who need to work a little bit on running, relying too much on creation, leaking out the back of the pocket, etc. And when you have quick pressure up the middle, that instantly exacerbates all of the things that they're trying to work on, all the things that there are, you know, that, you know, that there are their flaws. The Panthers spent a shit ton of money on guards. You know, so first things first is they brought in Dave Canales, big scheme guy, very similar stuff to what Ben Johnson does. And they signed two very good guards in Damian Lewis and Robert Hunt. So Theo Ash tweeted this out. He said, the Carolina Panthers signed Damian Lewis and Robert Hunt last offseason. Rushing DVOA rose from -15.5% to -6.2%. Passing DVOA rose from -27.3% to -4.3%. Total DVOA rose from 27.5% to 11.6%. The Bears should hope for a similar rise in efficiency. A 16% jump would be huge. So basically, if the Bears jumped the same amount, like the same percentage, like relative to their where they were, if the Bears jumped that much in on total DVOA offense, that would put them even with where the Vikings were this year offensively. So that's something I think gets lost in the sauce with Caleb's rookie year. And like, was Caleb's rookie year and was this year with the Bears a disappointment compared to expectations? Obviously. I think with what Jaden Daniels was doing, you know, it's real easy to lose perspective that Caleb Williams did not have a bad rookie season. Was he underwhelming? Sure. But he was perfectly in line with what a rookie quarterback tends to do. And I don't just mean all rookie quarterbacks. I'm not it's not when you make an excuse for a bad rookie. There was a difference between a bad season because a guy is a rookie and a bad rookie season. For instance, with one stat that I really like to use, I've talked about it on this podcast before, I think, is adjusted net yards per attempt plus. So adjusted net yards per attempt is like the best single stat for looking at an offense's passing results. And that's where you take regular yards per attempt. There's a bonus for touchdown passes. There is a penalty for interceptions, and there's a penalty. And then you also subtract sack yardage from passing yardage and then divide by, you know, the total dropbacks plus sacks, to get an idea basically of how many actual yards did your team tend to gain on pass attempts. So Caleb, and then the plus part is where Pro Football Focus, they will take everybody's stats that year and they will average them out to determine like what league average is. And then they set league average at 100. And then if you're below 100, that's how much worse than average your guy was. If you're above 100, that's how much better than average your guy was. So Caleb's adjusted net yards per attempt plus this year was an 88. So he was below average. And I'm not going to sit here and tell you that that is awesome. But like, when you want to put it in comparison, you want to put it in rookie context. Like, for instance, Justin Fields' rookie year, his adjusted net yards per attempt plus, what is going on with this? Damn. Okay. His adjusted net yard. What the? My mouse. Sorry, gang. His adjusted net yards per attempt plus was 75. In year two, he was only a 79 still. It took him until year three when he managed a 91, which is, oh shit, what happened? Travis, am I here?
Yeah, you're here.
Please keep this tab open. Why is it?
Ladies and gentlemen, old man fights with computer.
I don't know what I did to my... Yeah, okay. So I also looked at, you know, Kyler Murray's rookie season was something that I used as a guide as a benchmark for Caleb too. I think Kyler's rookie year adjusted net yards per attempt plus was like a 90 overall, so right next, very similar to Caleb. And then I looked at other, and I believe Trevor Lawrence was actually below Caleb by quite a bit. So when you look at his peers, when you look at guys drafted similarly, you look at their progression throughout their careers. A completely average and normal progression for Caleb compared to other guys similar to him draft-wise and from year one to year two If he takes a leap that most guys take in year two, then he's already an above average quarterback. He's already going to be an above average quarterback in year two. If he takes then a similar leap from year two to three that those guys tend to take, he's going to end up probably a Pro Bowl caliber quarterback by year three. And that's not me saying if everything goes well, if he defies history, if he does this, but no, I'm not saying if he defies history. And that's what we talked about with Justin Fields, is how he would have needed to defy history and be an outlier in order to succeed based on how bad he did early on. Caleb doesn't need to defy history. He just needs to take the same caliber jump that other guys similar to him tend to take. And he's still on track. I know it was disappointing. I know we were hoping he'd have a better than usual rookie season, but it's important to note that he still had a pretty good for a rookie season. He still had a pretty normal rookie season for a guy of his caliber. And so just like with that Theo tweet, if Caleb takes the kind of leap that you should expect this guy to take, if the Bears offense takes the kind of leap that the Panthers did by reinforcing their interior offensive line, then they can get good in a hurry. And it's important to note that with how many, you know, close, tragic, bad luck losses they have, they're already going to be a team that's on a lot of lists for, you know, when Bill Barnwell goes through every year and he says, like, these are the teams just that had really bad luck and are likely to improve. These are the teams that had really good luck and are likely to regress. The Bears are going to be on that list of teams that you should just naturally expect to get a bounce because of how many one-score games went against them last year. How many one-score games went against them in the entire Eberflus era. Like, coaching can make a huge difference there. So it's, you're not betting against history. You're not trying to convince yourself, you know, you're not trying to look, you're not trying to cherry pick anything. There's very optimistic reasons to believe that fixing this offense, this interior offensive line, can enable a huge offensive jump, and that Caleb will take a normal jump for a guy in his position and be pretty darn good this year in year two and get right back on track.
You brought it back. You brought it back to the interior line. We took a trip and we came all the way back around to the beginning. I'm impressed. I wanted to see if you'd be able to do it.
Yeah.
You followed the star principle, Kyle. Well done. Right. Yeah. So you're talking about one guy who is maybe looked at incorrectly. I want to talk about another Bear who this affects, who is looked at incorrectly by everybody outside the organization. And that's poor Braxton Jones, who can now. Here's the other thing about getting two guards, right, and targeting a center. Everybody can once again stop the annual offseason ritual of pretending that the Bears are going to try to replace their left tackle, because Braxton Jones is a very good left tackle. Like, by PFF, he was a top 10 left tackle this year. Darnell Wright was a top 8 right tackle this year. The tackles were not our problem. Like you said, when you were talking about Caleb's issues, it was the middle of the line falling apart completely, you know, almost from the second the play started, right? Braxton Jones is another guy I wanted to mention because he feels like a guy who could be in line for an extension. The Bears have a lot of money. They got a lot of cash right now. If they don't make a move for a guy like Trey Hendrickson, even after signing Dalman, even if that's like a big contract for a center, the Bears are going to be flush with cash. Braxton is heading into that last year of his deal. It feels maybe kind of like a no-brainer to lock him up.
That's a case where I think the perception that people do seem to have about him kind of helps the Bears out. Where,
yeah.
Like, we think he's... I mean, so first of all, Braxton Jones had a 77.4 overall grade per PFF, an 80.8 pass blocking grade. So that was good for 20th out of all tackles in the out of 141 tackles, not left or right tackles, just tackles. He was 20th. 17th when it comes to pass blocking grade. 35th when it comes to run blocking grade. That's all very good stuff. And he was solid, very solid down the stretch in 2023. So we think we're Braxton.
These are the numbers, the stats, this is what you want from like a guy at this stage of his career, right? Like, I can't.
And he's gotten better.
You aren't going to draft a dude in the first round who will probably be better than Braxton Jones.
Right. He's gotten better every year. Now, the concerns I get, he still doesn't have it. He's never going to be able to fix his anchor. He's still going to be vulnerable sometimes to dudes with a dominant bull rush. That is the limitation there. We saw that in the Rams game. Jared Verse did as Jared Verse did to many guys, but Jared Verse has that one goddamn trick. And when we talked about it on the draft, when we talked about it in our draft preview last year, we were like, look, he's a one trick pony. But if you have to pick one fucking trick, It's that one, which is that he's very fast and very strong, and he can push your left tackle over consistently, and he will do it 10 times a game. So yeah, I mean, Braxton Jones is going to have some limitations, but so this is a guy still we believe in. He's a very solid tackle. The perception, though, is always that the Bears need to replace him for some reason. He keeps getting for the 10 millionth time.
I can't believe it.
For the 10 millionth time, I will reference the Bill James adage that bad organizations tend to blame their best players. Bad offensive lines somehow focus all of their criticism on the one guy who's generally not the problem.
Yeah.
For years, you'd have, I mean, I don't, you had Bears fans who really wanted to believe that Tevin Jenkins was an elite guard, but just shit constantly on Braxton Jones. I didn't understand it. Now, the one concern also with Braxton Jones is that this is the second year in a row where he did miss a decent chunk of time with an injury.
True.
So the durability is somewhat of a question, but yeah, with the perception of Braxton Jones around the league versus what we think the reality of him is, this is maybe a time to buy low on an extension, you know?
Yeah.
Braxton Jones will trade some security for a fairly low cap number. But yeah, no, the other thing I will say that if you are somewhat of a Braxton Jones skeptic, what I think these moves at guard do is it does leave you the option potentially of taking a guy like Will Campbell, where there's some guard tackle flexibility there. And it's like, look, you just add this guy to your general depth, and the plan is that he's a 2026 starter somewhere, whether that be whether he beats out Braxton Jones and he ends up being your left tackle, or whether he just takes over for Joe Tooney, or he takes over for Jonah Jackson. You know, you still take a guy like that. That's one option that they could pursue in the draft, but I would agree that that became a lot less likely with these moves and hopefully with the signing of Dahlman.
Yeah, I mean, if you're there at 10 and you think the best guy available is a Kelvin Banks, a guy who could legitimately play left tackle in the NFL, but's also going to be a fantastic guard if that's the route you go,
you are never going to pick. You're never going to regret spending that pick on a guy who could be a great tackler guard, because you will always end up needing one. It's just going to happen.
Absolutely. And we could talk about the other guy at effects, but Darnell Wright is just fantastic. Darnell Wright was incredible this year. And let's see, he gave up six sacks, and I would say at least five of those were because our offensive coordinator did not know where he was supposed to be, and nobody knew where they were supposed to be.
Yeah.
If Darnell improves a pace like every college offensive lineman does into the NFL, this year he's going to be like a top five tackle, tackle for sure.
It's not just that there's one thing. And because usually with the Bears, they almost always pin their hopes for improvement on one thing.
Yeah.
So it would be either the coaching change or they added new players. For once, they are adding new players and massively upgrading the coach. And you have in Ben Johnson, a coach who builds everything through his offensive line, through his protection schemes, through his run blocking schemes. The upgrade in terms of how this offensive line is being coached should be massive, but they didn't just settle there. They are adding better players too. So when you consider both of those things, there's a lot of reasons to believe that, you know, and an offensive line, it is a position where you are better the better the guy next to you is. And the more you can trust that guy. So when you have, you know, Darnell Wright next to Jonah Jackson, a guy who, you know, again, average, but has started 40 games in this system, knows where he's going, knows what his assignment's going to be. When Braxton Jones can trust that, that has an effect on Braxton Jones. When Darnell Wright can trust that. When you have Darnell Wright when you have Braxton Jones next to Joe Tooney, that, you know, one of the most experienced guards, you know, Joe Tooney is going to be where he's supposed to be. That has a huge effect on a guy like Braxton Jones and what he's able to do and the trust he's able to. He's like, I don't have to cheat inside on this one because I know my guy is going to be there. I can just focus on what I need to do here. I can kick out a little wider if I need to because this guy's faster than me. I can do this, you know, for this bull to counter this bull rush. So that the effect of those things and the play calling that protects the offensive line rather than exposes it constantly, which I think we could say is the hallmark of Shane Waldron. Like, I've never seen a scheme. So even in the Mike Martz era, I had never seen a scheme where the offensive line coordinator was so determined to show you over and over again just how bad his offensive line
Yeah. He really wanted you to know.
I'm going
to
leave you on an island. I'm going to leave my tackles on an island constantly. I'm going to ask my guards to do the most outrageous kicking outside and pulling that anyone's ever seen. Nobody's going to know what the fuck is going on. Our blitz pickups are non-existent. Our protection shifts aren't real. Like, it's just incredible. So all of those changes should be massive. And they should have a massive effect on Caleb Williams, because if he can work on the things he actually needs to work on, if he's not in survival mode all of the time, this is a kid who should take the same kind of leap from year one. And I know people think Trevor Lawrence has been a disappointment, and I agree that he is to this point. I think that's mostly what Jacksonville's done around him in the years after year two. But if you look at the leap Trevor Lawrence took from year one to year two, Joe Burrow took from year one to year two, Kyler Murray took from year one to year two, it is completely in line with the rookie season Caleb had and completely in line with the changes that have been made around him to expect a similar year two leap from our guy and a year two leap from our offense.
Yeah, absolutely. I guess to put a pin in that, just want to bring up the study that I always bring up about, it was in baseball, it wasn't in football, but it bears repeating that improving a position from a place of negative war to just completely average wins above replacement player is just as good and sometimes better than improving an average player to a great player. And what the Bears have done here and what they're probably going to do in signing Dalman or going out and getting a veteran center is, even if these guys have a mid year, even if Tooney isn't this, you know, top five guard that he has been, and he's just whatever, top 10, top 15 or something, age catches up with him a bit, getting up to that level of, we're okay, is going to be a huge boon for the Bears, because our guard play last year was an absolute disaster. Our center was non-existent. I mean, God, I still remember that first game of the year against the Titans, where a rookie defensive tackle threw Coleman Shelton through the fucking multiverse.
I think our hopes for the season definitely in those first two games were lowered quite a bit when we saw, like, oh, there is this scheme and these players have very little response to quick interior pressure, which is the nightmare for rookie quarterbacks. It'll always be the nightmare for rookie quarterbacks.
And I mean, the other thing I wanted to say, what we're seeing here is the first time, I think, in Bears history, but at the very least in our lifetimes, where we finally have the thing we've been asking for forever. A coach who wants his GM and his quarterback, a quarterback who wants his GM and his coach, and a GM who wants his coach and his quarterback. Just everybody is in tune. Everybody likes each other. Everybody wants the others to be there. They're all working in harmony. It's crazy. You would think you would try that every time, right? But the Bears have finally backed their ass into it, with Ben Johnson basically begging for 2 years to take this goddamn job to get us to fire Matt Eberflus. But we did it, so... Yeah, these are two. The first signing was okay with Joe Tooney. Now it feels like two signings that really, really feel good about this offensive line. I'm feeling pretty strong.
I mean, we talked about how weak this free agency crop is, and you're not going to find two all-pro guards in one offseason. The Chiefs did it by landing Trey Smith and Joe Tooney a couple years ago, but like, you're not going to, that's very hard to pull off. But just plugging both gaps. Plugging one with an all-pro guard and plugging another one with a capable average starter, the net effect of both of those moves is fantastic. Mm-hmm. You're hoping Drew Dalman comes along too. If not, you know, maybe Ryan Kelly. But I want to circle back real quick just to get on the record. We floated out there. To be clear, Travis, if Trey Hendrickson's available for a two, you want them to make that move.
Like, instantly, in a heartbeat, wouldn't you?
I think I would, yeah.
Yeah?
What
would hold you back on such a thing?
I don't know. Part of me is like, God, it would be nice to have 2 second-round picks and actually use them both for once. But yeah, I think...
You won't find Trey Hendrickson there. Well, no. Or will you? To our defensive line review. I love the second round defensive line.
Look at you,
this year.
Previewing son of a bitch. All right, look at that.
But you segued beautifully into these last 15 minutes. I kind of wanted to do an overview of this offseason before we dig into it. We're going to go episode by episode.
Hold on.
Oh, okay.
I got one more question.
You segued.
I got one more because this is gonna be the last. This will be the last time we're on this mic before we're reacting to free agency.
Yeah, yeah.
Because it kicks off Monday, right?
It's like the 12th.
Okay, so it kicks off when Wednesday.
Let's see, NFL free agency.
So I guess it was theoretically possible that we could have recorded before that, but we're not going to. Let's be honest with ourselves.
Yeah.
So this is our last chance before
March 12th. I was right.
So I saw that. What do you want to do about wide receiver 3? Because I just saw that the Jaguars released Josh Reynolds today, and that to me feels like the cheap, knows the system.
Josh Reynolds is real bad these days. That's why they released him.
But he was fine a year ago with Ben Johnson. He was fine.
Wasn't he a Bill a year ago?
No.
Am I thinking of a different guy?
I think you are thinking of a different guy.
Was
no, Josh Reynolds, Josh Reynolds went to the Rams and then I believe got cut and then ended up a Jag.
Yeah, yeah.
But in 2023, he had 600 yards as the number 2 wide receiver in Detroit. I'm not saying there's anything exciting about Josh Reynolds. I've just been wondering what they're going to do about that wide receiver three spot. And to me, that makes sense as a guy you plug in for basically nothing, knows the system. And again, this is an offense that shouldn't. You need a better wide receiver 3 than you currently have on the roster, which is Tyler Scott. But I don't think you need a dominant wide receiver 3. This offense should mostly run through DJ Moore and Roma Dunze. Obviously, my ideal would be my boy Chris Godwin. I know that. I said that last week. But looking at the moves that might be made, you know, when you add a Joe Tooney and his salary, and I mean, Jonah Jackson should be noted, his salary is not super cheap this year either. I wonder if they try to do like a fake extension there to lower that cap number. And if we do make a move for a Trey Hendrickson, or if we make a signing for a Drew Dahlman, that probably takes them pretty quickly out of a Chris Godwin sweepstakes anyway. So if you're trying to solve wide receiver 3 on the cheap there, Josh Reynolds makes a lot of sense suddenly, although some people, I think I've heard some people looking at like a Rondale Moore. I don't think they,
I don't want to think about Rondale Moore. Don't speak that name to me.
I don't think they dip into the washed superstar wide receiver market, even though Nuke Hopkins is out there and Devontae Adams are out there, but
yeah, they don't really fit. I mean, we already have guys at
right,
those
need,
positions.
Yeah.
Right?
We don't need an outside wide receiver. We need someone who can, or we could maybe see DJ Moore play a lot more slot in this system. I don't know.
I don't love Josh Reynolds. However, I think as a sort of pacifier to Tyler Scott there, where you're like, one of these guys will be the number 3 wide receiver. It's not like they're going to be the number 3 option.
Yeah, and this
Cole Kmet's going to be the third option.
Another
spoiler
alert for our draft cover. I'm not enamored of this wide receiver draft class. So this is the draft class that I wish was the 2023 wide receiver draft class. Remember, 2023, everyone was like, there's no headline wide receiver in this draft, and there really wasn't, but it was one of the best slot receiver drafts I've ever seen in 2023, where you had, you know, Zay Flowers, and you had Jaxon Smith-Njigba, and you had Tank Dell, and you had all of those guys, Josh Downs, all of those guys were going to be available. And it wasn't the year for the Bears to make that move because they were looking for a true number one. They ended up getting DJ Moore. And then last year they needed another outside wide receiver. They get Roma Dunze. But this is the year where I'm like, fuck, why can't this be that draft where we have 2 second round picks and there's just like a bevy of beautiful slot wide receivers sitting right there? It's not that draft. So, yeah, I do wonder if you make a move for a Josh Reynolds that knows the system and just call it a day for now.
What is this offseason, Kyle? Because that's kind of what I wanted to talk about. I am looking out at it. I am looking at free agency. I am looking at the draft, right? I have been watching a ton of tape. Obviously, we're familiar with most of the guys in free agency. Do you remember a worse crop of offseason talent available to get? This might combined be the worst free agency and draft together.
In
my lifetime.
It's not exciting. It's a good year to need help in the trenches. So fortunately, that this is the year that is the Bears' biggest need. Is the trenches. So it's a good year for that. Especially, it's a good year for guys who might be guards, might be tackles in the draft, as we'll talk about. And that's again a spot where the Bears need some help. So or need some depth now. But yeah, I mean, if you're like, this is the worst. Like, the Titans have to be the unluckiest team with the number one overall pick.
Yeah.
Since the year since the year the Chiefs had it, right? Because a couple years ago the Jaguars had the number one overall pick, and they, you know, it was a crappy class, and they took the wrong defensive end and Trayvon Walker. They should have taken Aiden Hutchinson. But like, that sting was a little bit mitigated by the fact that they had had the number one overall pick the year before and got Trevor Lawrence.
Yeah.
So like, this is the worst time to have a number one overall pick in a hot minute, because the Titans, not only, I mean, when the Bears had the number one overall pick and we didn't want them to use it, there was demand there. People wanted to trade up for Bryce Young or CJ Stroud. The Bears got a haul. No one's trading up a haul to the Titans right now.
Nobody wants that pick.
Nobody's in love with these quarterbacks. But at the same time, if you're the Titans, can you afford to not take a quarterback? Like, everyone, this is the time of year where everyone loves to say, just take the best player available, and you mock Travis Hunter to them or whatever. But like, we live in reality. This is the NFL. If you're Brian Callahan, this is your maybe one chance to have a head coaching job. You're entering year two, terrible year one. People aren't really actually going to be patient with you if you just fucking run it back again with Will Levis. They're not going to be.
Yeah.
And if Shedeur Sanders and Cam Ward end up being better players than I currently think they are, spoilers for our quarterback episode in a couple weeks, I guess. If they end up being better
spoilers for the quarterback episode, it's not just going to involve quarterbacks. That's how much we have to say about these quarterbacks.
Yeah. You know, if they end up being better, then I think you're insta-fired in Tennessee because you didn't take a quarterback. So, like, but at the same time, there's not one position player that, I mean, Travis Henry is cool. I think he could be a very good corner, but do
he
I
said
think
Travis
that...
Henry, you're reminding me of running backs.
Oh God, Travis Henry. What is his name?
Travis Hunter.
Travis Hunter. Travis Henry. Jesus Christ.
Dangerous to remind me of Bills running backs, Kyle. God, I have an encyclopedic knowledge of all.
You love them all. You really did love them all, from Travis Henry to Willis McGahee to Marshawn Lynch to
they kept
Fred
taking
Jackson,
like my favorite people.
CJ Spiller. Yeah, you love those guys. He'd always take him in fantasy. I mean, this man took CJ. Every year, this man said it was going to be the year CJ Spiller broke out, folks. Every year, he believed.
My love for Clemson running backs will live forever.
Yeah, no, I mean, Travis Hunter is a cool player, and I think he's going to be a very good NFL corner, but I don't think he's going to be Darrell Revis. And even if he is Darrell Revis, who was the number one overall pick, and you got Darrell Revis, like, no, you didn't waste the pick, but did Darrell Revis change the trajectory of the Jets franchise?
Right.
Did peak Nnamdi Asamoah? Like, I know corner is a premium position, but there is a difference between quarterback and every other premium position. And even then, it's not, people really like Abdul Carter. I'm not seeing it as much. I mean, I don't dislike him, but I don't see Myles Garrett there. I don't see Micah Parsons. So it's not even, so it's the year where even if you take a draft, even if you take an edge or you take a position player instead of a quarterback, I still don't think there's one surefire position player in this draft that you get that excited about that high. This is just, like, this is the worst year I could think of to have the number one overall pick since the Eric Fisher, Luke Yokel year, for sure.
Yeah, I think, I mean, I don't want to spoil too much about our draft coverage, but my top two guys in this draft are James Pierce and Will Johnson. And people are avoiding James Pierce like the plague because of alleged character concerns.
Hot ass takeage.
Yeah.
But that's why we have Travis, folks. That's why
aren't going to talk about corners too much. So I think Will Johnson is a better corner than Travis Hunter. Yeah. I think Travis gets a lot of love because he plays both sides of the ball, and I know he wants to play both sides of the ball in the NFL, but you're insane if you think you're gonna do that, man. Or you're the Browns. I don't know, maybe somebody will actually let him do it. But that's the dearth of quality we've got here. Kyle, you know, usually when you see mock drafts, you kind of know, okay, the top 20 guys, here they are. In some order, it's gonna be these guys. And then after that, it gets a little more nebulous. It's like, ooh, maybe this defensive end will go at 23. Maybe he'll go at 43. It depends on, you know, what the GM wants. There's a little pile of guys there, right? I feel like that mindset creeps up into this draft into the top 10 picks. I feel like this, once we get to like pick 7, anybody could go at that pick.
I mean, it's, I mean, the Ashton Jaunte pick would not be purely indefensible just from a standpoint of like, who the fuck else do you, do you see any other blue chip players in this ballpark? I don't know that I do. So yeah, I mean, it'll be, I think the most fun we'll have is probably discussing the offensive line prospects. That's the most interesting crop there for sure. But yeah, I mean, I finally did break out of my malaise. I did do the spreadsheet for the top two quarterbacks, and I just did it for those top two. I don't care how many stupid mock drafts I see where a guy like Jackson Dart sneaks into the first round.
It's ridiculous.
I don't care if someone's crazy enough to do it, like the Broncos with Bo Nix. Like, I don't care if it happens. I refuse to acknowledge that that is something that I should talk about as an adult, as a real possibility. There's not three quarterbacks in this draft. There's, I don't know if there's two. I don't know if there's one. So I refuse to, I will do what I usually do with the later round quarterbacks. I will enter them all after they are drafted just so I have the data in the database, but I'm not going to bother writing it up on 5-6 guys like I normally do every year for this draft. There's not five worth discussing. But yeah, I did do it. The numbers are there. We'll discuss them. Definitely have some hot takes about both of them. I think, I don't know if they're hot, you know, but I have takes.
It's hard to have a hot take in this draft because so many people are just like,
yeah, you'll find
everybody
kind of
sucks ass. Yeah, I don't know.
You'll find four or five guys who agree with you, four or five guys who don't. It's a real, someone's going to nail this draft and come out looking like a genius. And I don't think that's going to be us this year. 2023 was our year. We really covered ourselves in glory. We nailed those offensive linemen, but we also nailed Tyree Wilson being useless. We were there. But
we
but don't look at how things worked out for 2024. Don't do it.
Whoa, my love of Cooper DeJean shone the fuck through.
That's true.
Yep. As a rookie. Thank you.
You insisted that man was an all pro corner, and you were right. So
he is not a safety. And yeah, safety. Fourth quarterback in the NFL by PFF grade, by the way.
Damn straight.
So go Coop. Go Damn Coop. Straight. Who was the Clemson corner? Nate Wiggins? He got
Nate
hurt.
Wiggins, yeah.
He got hurt, right?
Yeah.
That fucking
And
sucked.
He got hurt after a very good-looking preseason, which I mean,
he did.
But yeah, he was.
Yeah. Damn
you
it,
did like
Nate.
You really loved that corner class last year, and I don't think you were wrong to. So
I did.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Right, well, that's our preview basically for the offseason.
We will
run back to the microphone if the Bears do something crazy.
Yeah, we'll be back here probably in a week talking about the results of the first couple days of free agency. And then we'll start, we'll do the quarterback episode. Usually that's the way what we kick off our draft coverage with. We'll do the quarterback episode. And we need to sit down, find a date that we can actually set it. Because usually we do have these little off-season recording sessions kind of fly by the seat of our pants. Some nights it's Sunday, Monday, you know. But we need to pick a date and time that we can give to my buddy Butka Stats so that he knows when to join us for offensive line talk. So we'll have to
We'll have a guest.
Put something on the calendar for that. But yeah, we got good stuff coming. This is our time. Yeah.
It's Bears season, baby.
Yeah, and obviously we'll talk to our Packer friend buddy Nick, make sure he wants to come on our live draft cast again. This year I'll try
Hell
to get
yeah.
a better device so that hopefully that audio does not get destroyed like it did last year.
This is going to be a fun draft to talk through because it's going to be chaos. Like, I don't know.
Yeah, I have no fucking clue what's going to happen. Not even from pick one do I know what's going to happen. So it'll be interesting how that goes.
All right. Well, I'll see you next week. Way out on that bumper's road. Now you know I'm leaving Chicago. But I sure do hate to go. Now you know I'm leaving.